You are listening to the Grace Church Podcast. To learn more about Grace, including our gathering times, visit us online at thegracechurch.net. Today's sermon comes from Pastor Tommy Jones.
Today we start with the first cup. And the first cup is, it's right here. This may look like a planter to you, but it is a cup. It's hard to find cups this big, so just use your imagination. It's a cup. But this cup represents the cup of God's wrath. And this is where we're going to start today. And if you're like, man, I invited a friend, and it's Cup of God's Wrath Sunday. Like, I didn't know it was going to be Cup of God's Wrath Sunday. Just stick with me, because this is good news. Trust me. But this cup represents for us the cup of God's wrath. And we're going to learn three things about God's wrath today. The first thing we're going to learn is that God's wrath is just. And just and fair don't mean the same thing, and we'll get to that. And the second thing we're going to learn is that God's wrath is controlled. And then the third thing we're going to find is that God's wrath is incredibly unfair. And so, but why a cup? Why would we use a cup to illustrate God's wrath? And the answer is because that's the imagery the Bible uses. The biblical imagery of God's hatred for sin is a cup of wrath. And so if you check out Psalm 75:8, it says this. Psalm 75:8 says, "For a cup is in the hand of the Lord, and the wine foams. It is well mixed, and he pours out of this. Certainly all the wicked of the earth must drain and drink its dregs." So there's this imagery of God having a cup in his hand, and it's being poured out, and that is his wrath, and we're having a drink in it. And Jeremiah goes into the same thing. Jeremiah 25, it says, "For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says to me. Take this cup of the wine of wrath from my hand and give it to all the nations to whom I send you to drink from it. Then they will drink and loudly vomit and act insanely because of the sword that I'm going to send among them." Okay, so there's this imagery. And guys, you see this over and over in the Bible of God's wrath against sin being like this cup. And it's a cup of wine, but it's a cup of wine that makes you incredibly sick, and it's toxic, and it's venomous, and it does horrific things. And when this cup is poured out, there is death and destruction. And this is the imagery we have. And so it's the imagery we're going to use. And we might not like this, but you cannot skip over this part of the story if you want to embrace the resurrection on Sunday. We got to understand this. This is a part of the Easter story. And if you don't really understand the cup of God's wrath, then you won't really appreciate the resurrection. And so let's talk about it. Let's talk about a cup that is just. Why do we say God's wrath is just? Remember, just doesn't mean fair. Just means right. Just means correct. Because God is just. God is holy, and God is righteous, and God is unique, and God is perfect, and God is without flaw and without error. God is without sin. As a matter of fact, sin offends God. God hates sin. Now, let's be honest about us. For you and I, there are levels of sin that we are willing to tolerate. Am I right? There's levels of unforgiveness that we're willing to tolerate. There's levels of pride, there's levels of lust, there's levels of shame, there's levels of guilt. There's levels of all sorts of sin that you and I are willing to tolerate. Now, we hate sin. We hate their sin. We hate sins we can't commit, right? We hate those. We make signs about how much we hate them. But our sin, there's levels of our own sin that just don't bother us that much because we are not like God. There is no level of sin that does not offend God. There is no level of sin that God tolerates. There is no level of sin that death, no level of death that God tolerates. No level of evil that God tolerates. God hates sin, all sin. We're not like God. As a matter of fact, in our natural condition, when I say our natural condition, what I mean is apart from Christ. In our natural condition, not only do we not hate sin, but we hate God. We're going to read Romans after this. You think today is tough? Come back in a few weeks. We jump into Romans. Apart from Christ, we hate God. We hate him. We hate God. We hate anybody who would come into our world and say, "You're now going to live in my upside down kingdom under my rule and reign. You're going to do things my way." We hate anyone that tries to tell us what we have to do. And if you don't believe me, I've got two words for you. Mask mandate. I know my audience. We hate it when people try to tell us how to live. And so there's something in our humanity that hates the idea of God when we are apart from God. Because we are not naturally good. Matter of fact, there's no goodness in me apart from God. But God is not like that. He is all goodness. He is all perfection. He is all light. He is all righteousness. His goodness is greater than my goodness. His holiness is greater than my holiness. His goodness is greater than my badness. And that's even more impressive. Right? He's God. And he hates sin. And he created a world that was perfect. And we chose sin. And sin separated us from God. And so he hates sin, but he loves people. He loves people. And he wants us to be connected with him. And sin is the thing that is disconnecting us. So what kind of loving God wouldn't hate sin if he loved people? And this is why his wrath against sin is just. His wrath against sin is right because he loves you. He hates anything that is destroying you. And so God's wrath against sin is the just response of a good God to evil in a world he loves. But his wrath is just. Second thing I want us to see is this. God's wrath is controlled. It's controlled. And there's a story in Genesis 6:11, and it says, "Now the earth was corrupt in the sight of God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for humanity had corrupted its way upon the earth. Then God said to Noah, 'The end of humanity has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of people. And behold, I'm about to destroy them with the earth. Make for yourself an ark of gopher wood, and you shall make an ark with compartments and cover it, and inside and outside with pitch.'" Okay, so this is why I think we can see a thread that God's wrath is controlled. God looks upon the earth that he created, the beautiful, spotless creation that he created, and he sees sin everywhere, and God says, "All right, I'm going to wipe this thing clean," but he doesn't kill everybody. And because he doesn't kill everybody, because everyone's not eliminated, we can see that his wrath is controlled. The same thing in the Garden of Eden. I mean, God creates humanity and they sin against him. And instead of wiping them out and saying, "Psh, I'm done with you," he removes them from the garden and then launches a plan to reconnect all of humanity back into paradise. Why? Because his wrath is controlled. We went through Exodus over and over and over. We saw Israelites turn their back on God, and they would build idols, and he didn't wipe them off the map because his wrath is controlled. The greatest evidence that God's wrath is controlled is the fact that I still have breath in my lungs. I know his wrath is controlled because you're all here. I'm here. His wrath is not like mine. See, my anger, if I'm angry at you, I'm angry at everybody because my anger is not controlled. Matter of fact, if someone makes me angry, I'm angry at the car in front of me, right? I'm angry at the person at Sonic. I'm angry at everybody. And so are you. I can tell by so many of your Facebook posts, right? Like, our anger isn't like a rifle. It's like a shotgun. It just blasts everywhere. God is not like that. He has emotions, but God is not just angry about no reason and blasting it all over the place. Just the way God doesn't fall in love with you, God has always loved you. He doesn't suddenly turn to anger. His anger exists. His wrath exists because there is sin in this world. The reason God has a cup of wrath is because we chose sin. He's always hated sin. It's not sporadic. It's not like God's cup of wine isn't like a drunk at a party spilling it on everybody and trying to dance, you know? It's not like that. Focused, controlled. And again, do you know how I know? I'm here. And if his wrath was like my wrath, I'd be gone. So would you. God's wrath is just, and it's controlled, and it's not against people. God's wrath is not against people. God's wrath is against sin. God loves people. He hates sin. So his wrath is just and it's controlled. And this third one is where we're going to camp out. And this is the Easter story. God's wrath is not fair. Brandy, would you do me a favor and read for them John chapter 18, verses 1 through 14?
When Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the ravine of the Kidron, where there was a garden in which he entered with his disciples. Now Judas also, who was betraying him, knew the place, for Jesus had often met there with his disciples. Judas then, having received the Roman cohort and officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees, came there with lanterns and torches and weapons. So Jesus, knowing all the things that were coming upon him, went forth and said to them, "Whom do you seek?" They answered him, "Jesus the Nazarene." He said to them, "I am he." And Judas also, who was betraying him, was standing with them. So when he said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. Therefore he again asked them, "Whom do you seek?" And they said, "Jesus the Nazarene." Jesus answered, "I told you I am he. So if you seek me, let these go their way, to fulfill the word which he spoke, 'Of those whom you have given me, I lost not one.'" Simon Peter then, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's slave and cut off his right ear, and the slave's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to Peter, "Put the sword into the sheath. The cup which the Father has given me, shall I not drink it?" So the Roman cohort and the commander and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him and led him to Annas first, for he was father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die on behalf of the people.
Thank you, ma'am. Guys, there's so much beauty in that passage. The first thing you need to see is humanity's hatred for someone who would come into the world and say, "Follow my rule and reign." I mean, Jesus is this amazing person who says, "Love your enemy," and all these things. But he also says, "You got to do it my way." And at one point, this rich guy comes to Jesus, and Jesus says, "Follow me." And the guy says, "Okay, how do I do it?" And Jesus says, "Get rid of everything you own and follow me." And the guy says, "I can't do it." And Jesus says, "Then walk on. Because to follow me, you must be willing to lay down everything in your life." And so people hated him. Look who betrayed him. Who betrayed Jesus? Who was the person who kissed him? And Judas was his friend. So he's betrayed by his friends. He's arrested by a Roman. And he's arrested because the Jewish religious leaders hate him. The Jews don't like him, the Romans don't like him, and his friends don't like him. Guys, that is the whole world at that point in time. Humanity hates him. Humanity hates his goodness. They hate his righteousness. They hate that he wants to lead. And so they arrest him. And as they're coming to him, they say, "Where is Jesus the Nazarene?" And he responds with something so gorgeous. In our translations, it says, he says, "I am he." But in the original translation, the word "he" wasn't in it. So when they said, "Where is Jesus the Nazarene?" he responded with, "I am." Maybe you remember that from Exodus. When Moses came upon the burning bush and he said, "Who shall I say sent me?" And the bush said, "Tell him I am." And God spoke to the bush and said, "You're standing on holy ground." And so when Jesus says, "I am," it says that all the people fell to their knees. Now, why did they fall down? I don't know. Maybe they fell down because they thought this man had committed blasphemy. Maybe they fell down because God poured out just a little of that controlled, just wrath in that circle. I don't know why they fell down, but I know at the mention of the name "I am," they went to their knees. And then they begin to arrest Jesus. And Peter pulls out a sword. Because even one that close to Jesus has a little humanity in him that still hates the ways of God. Remember, the ways of Jesus weren't lived by, it was live by the sword and die by the sword. The ways of Jesus were love your enemy and pray for those who persecute you. But Peter hates that. Something inside of him hates the ways of God. And so he pulls his sword and he cuts the ear off. And Jesus picks it up and says, hold on. What are you doing? Don't you know there's a cup and I'm going to drink it? And I read that and it was like, what cup are you talking about? What cup would Jesus be drinking? He wouldn't be drinking this cup. He wouldn't be drinking the cup of God's wrath, because God's wrath is against sin. And so surely it's not this cup, because that wouldn't be fair. That wouldn't be fair. That cup exists because of my sin. My sin is the reason there's a cup of God's wrath. So surely Jesus isn't talking about that cup when he says there's a cup he has to drink. And then I go to the Gospel of Matthew, Matthew 24. Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and told his disciples, sit here while I go over there and pray. And he took Peter and the other two sons of Zebedee with him and began to be grieved and distressed. And he said to them, my soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me. And he went a little beyond them and fell on his face and prayed, saying, my Father, if it's possible to let this cup pass from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. And he came to the disciples and found them asleep. And he said to Peter, so you men could not keep watching me for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying so that you do not come into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And he went away again a second time and prayed, my Father, if this cup cannot pass away unless I drink from it, then your will be done. Again, he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them again and went away and prayed a third time, saying the same thing once more. Then he came to the disciples and said, are you still sleeping? Behold, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up. Let's go. Behold, the one who is betraying me is near. Three times he says, take this cup from me. Three times he says, I don't want to drink this cup, but not my will, but your will. So what cup is he talking about? Because he can't be talking about this cup, because that is not fair unless the wrath of God isn't fair. It's the only thing that makes sense. The only thing that makes sense is that the wrath of God was somehow unfair. And then you read this in 2 Corinthians, and it says, he made him who knew no sin to be sin on our behalf, so that we might become the righteousness of God in him. And so as we look at the story, we have a story of a God who created a world without sin. And we chose sin, and our sin stained his world. And he loves us and hates sin, so he's eradicating sin from the world, and he has a wrath against it, and so his sin is just. But he's not wiping out everybody. Instead, he's decided to focus his wrath in on one thing, because his wrath is controlled. And then we see that Jesus the Christ, the spotless lamb, the one who came to take away the sin of the world, is going to drink a cup that belongs to me. And the only way it would be fair is if I were drinking the cup, not him. So we see the unfair, just, controlled wrath of God being absorbed by the one who knew no sin, but he became sin so that you and I might take on the righteousness of God in him. And so here's what we're going to do today in preparation for Easter. I've got a rock in my hand, and there's rocks on the altar over there, and there's rocks on the altar over there. In a moment, the band's going to come back up here, and they're going to play a song. And while they're playing the song, I'm going to invite those of you who are willing, those of you who desire the presence of God, those of you who desire to be active participants in this process, I'm going to invite you to pick up a rock. And the rock symbolizes sin, because sin is heavy. Now, if it was an accurate portrayal of my sin, it would be like Gibraltar, right? At least Pinnacle, but can't get Pinnacle Mountain in here. So I'm going to invite you all to pick up a rock. And well, again, why do we choose rocks? Why do we choose rocks to represent sin? Because what do with sinners? You stone them. So I'm going to invite you to pick up a rock. And this rock can be maybe sin you have yet to work out with God. Maybe it's sin you haven't dealt with in your life. Maybe it's some unforgiveness, and that is sin, and you need to deal with that. Maybe it's pride. Maybe it's racism. Maybe it's generational apathy. I don't know what your sin is. Maybe it's sin you've been forgiven for. And if you have no sin, then just stay seated, but make a big show out of it so we all know. But whatever your sin is, I'm going to invite you to pick up a rock and place it in this cup, because this cup is full because of your sin. This cup exists because of my sin. And so as the Lord leads you, as we move into this song, grab your sin and drop it in the cup, because the only righteous response from the world to the Lamb of God who came to take away the sin is to give him the sin. You don't have to keep carrying this. He came so that you might be free. He came so that you might be forgiven. So I'm going to invite you to take your sin and drop it in the cup. And you hear it? It's a little obnoxious. It's out there. It almost sounds a little bit like a hammer hitting a nail. Let go of it. Today, give it to him. On Friday night, we'll celebrate exactly how he took it. And on Sunday, we'll celebrate that we are free from it. But today, release it. It's not humanity his wrath is against. It's the sin that's destroying you. So today you're invited to own it. To own the sin. Because you cannot get rid of it if it's not yours. Own it and let it go. The Lamb of God came to take away the sin of the world. Maybe today it's time to give him yours. And listen, you don't have ushers for this. There's people who want to pray for you on the sides, but when you feel called to stand, stand and give him the sin he came to take.
If you are encouraged by today's message, be sure to rate us and hit subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you stream your podcasts. To experience other talks, videos, and live gatherings, visit us online at thegracechurch.net. And again, thanks for listening to the Grace Church Podcast.